We have been offering talks on the nights that I'm not here on the five faculties. So we've been trying to have kind of a theme going on in, you know, every month a theme, and sometimes several months the same theme. And so February and March have been so far about five faculties. And these are faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. And I gave an introductory talk to them some weeks ago. I think that recording failed, so it might not be on the website. But today, I thought I was like looking into what I want to share about this topic. And then I thought, like, well, what is actually the reason they're mentioned, or why is it an important teaching? And when I was doing, you know, some research looking into it, I found an article by Bhikkhu Bodhi, which is a scholar and monk. And so the logistics of this will be that I'll be kind of reading from this article, and it starts not at the beginning of the article, but there's a link at the top of the document where you can read the whole thing. And I will comment on it. So that's kind of the way I was thinking of it, to doing it today. And so I also record it and then either put a link there or a PDF with this article on the website. Let me start the reading then. So the five spiritual faculties, the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. The term Indriya, faculties, applies to this group as a whole and is derived from the name of the ancient Vedic god Indra, ruler of the devas. And the term accordingly suggests the divine-like quality of control and domination. The five faculties are so designated because they exercise control in their own specific compartments of the spiritual life. So I think this is an important pointer to why the five faculties are an important teaching, because they're just kind of, the Buddha has all these lists, the five this, the four this, the eight that, and whatnot. And this is one of those lists, and it's easy to kind of skip over and think like, oh yeah, for sure, yeah, faith is nice, mindfulness, great. But each of them is so designated. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, because they exercise control in their own specific compartment of our spiritual life. So then continues, as the god Indra vanquishes the demons and attains supremacy among the gods, so each of the five faculties is called upon to subdue a particular mental disability and to marshal the corresponding potency of the mind towards the breakthrough to final enlightenment. So each of them can help us to overcome some, he calls it mental disability. I don't know if I like that term, but it does speak to how we all have mental predispositions and mind predispositions, or certain conditionings and patterns. And each of these can help to overcome or subdue, he calls it subdue, these tendencies that we all have. So for example, I mean, a very obvious one could be that faith could help us to overcome doubt. And in this introductory talk I gave some weeks ago, I also mentioned that faith is one of the translations for the word sadda in Pali. And faith can sometimes have a bit of a connotation of this, yeah, religious, I have to believe in something, kind of from Christianity. While in Buddhism, it's not meant like that. It's a faith, it's more of a trust, confidence in our own ability to practice and in the practice itself, in the teachings, and in the text also, and the Buddha, not in him as a person, but in his, that he awakens so we can awaken too. Kind of that kind of faith. And so that's one example of how one of the faculties can help to overcome a certain tendency of the mind, like doubt. And energy can help us overcome sloth and torpor. If you have less energy, or sometimes there is this tendency of that sloth and torpor might arise. So restlessness, or sorry, sleepiness, or drowsiness, or laziness might arise, and what actually happens is that there's something underneath it. So it's not that we're actually just tired and we need rest, but sometimes there is something underneath it, and it can be really worthwhile to look at that. Look at what's actually underneath this feeling of sloth and torpor, this feeling of laziness or drowsiness. And then we can, like Bhikkhu Bodhi says, marshal the corresponding potency of the mind towards the breakthrough, to awakening. And so then we can marshal the energy to look at it. We can marshal the energy to look at, for example, this whatever is underneath the sloth and torpor, or the doubt, or these kind of things. And in this way, when we start looking at the opposites of these faculties, when we start to honestly look at them in our minds and hearts, they start to move through us, instead of that we resist them and they get sticky. So that's kind of the difference if we start to honestly and open in an open way look at them. So the notion of faculty is partly akin to the ancient Greek conception of the virtues. Like the virtues, the faculties are active powers which coordinate and canalize our natural energies, directing them towards the achievement of an inward harmony and balance essential to our true happiness and peace. And so they're active powers that coordinate and canalize our natural energies. And so he uses the word power here, and what I understand from the texts is that once we master those five spiritual faculties, those five aspects of the mind, that they become powers, that they become powers in our spiritual awakening. So once we perfect them. Since the faculties are to serve as agents of inward control, this implies that apart from their restraining influence, our nature is not under our own control. I'm not sure if I'm reading that right. Mm-hmm. how I understand this is that are you getting it, Carol?
Well, I'm breaking it apart. The faculties serve as agents of inward control. Mm-hmm. This implies that apart from their restraining influence, our nature is not under our own control. So we have these sort of helper guides, helper agents, because our nature is not under our control.
Yeah, so they're helping us to restrain this.
Left to ourselves without the faculties, our natures would run riot.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Without
cultivating
the faculties, we would be uncultivated.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's actually a really beautiful way of using this teaching. If we cultivate those faculties, then we start to be able to restrain the unwholesome qualities in the mind and heart, or we'll be able to work skillfully with unwholesome qualities in heart mind. If we have some faith, some trust, some confidence, if we have some energy, some mindfulness, some concentration and some wisdom, our minds look completely different than if the opposites are present, of doubt or lack of energy or not being mindful. That's a big one. If we're not mindful, nothing happens. If we're scattered, you know, if we're delusional. So that's not really helpful for our path, of course. So left to itself, without the guidance of a superior source of instruction, the mind is a prey to forces that swell up from within itself. Dark forces which hold us in subjection and prevent us from attaining our own highest welfare and genuine good. Yeah, so this is kind of an expansion on that. The mind is prey to forces that swell up from within itself. And so we all know, like we all experience this, right? That this unwholesomeness arises and all of a sudden we snap at our partner or our colleague or whoever it is. we just kind of tune out in front of Netflix or something like that, you know. And if we have these five faculties, if we're actively cultivating them, then we're not left to, then the mind is not left to itself. He calls the five faculties the superior source of instruction. So in that way, we can notice, like, if we feel like these forces inside, these, he calls them the dark forces, if we notice them, like, oh, how can I now cultivate maybe some of those aspects? Maybe I can at least be mindful. maybe some wisdom can arise, maybe some energy, some faith or trust. And it's not that we can make it happen, of course, that we just, you know, flip a switch and we're all energetic and mindful and wise. It's more like this gradual process that we can cultivate. So he also says these forces are the defilements, kilesa. Kilesa is the Pali word for what is often translated in English as defilements. And the English translation is maybe not that great. it sounds really awful, as I understand. I'm not a native speaker, so. And so kilesa is about, there are the three unwholesome roots of our existence, which is greed, hatred, and delusion. And those three are the three kilesa. And so the umbrella term in English is defilements, but you could say the three unwholesome roots as well, for example. And those translations of greed, hatred, and delusion are also not great. with greed, it's about everything from the mildest form of some kind of wanting or kind of forward moving to the most intense kind of attachment and clinging that we might experience. And hatred is about the smallest, kind of tiniest bit of irritation to intense hate. That's all accompanied, come under the umbrella of this term that we translate as hatred or aversion sometimes. And so he's talking about the forces of defilements. And so these three unwholesome roots, these three kilesa, are the roots of all the unwholesomeness that arises in our minds and hearts, according to the Buddhist teachings. And so we're talking about all of the unwholesomeness that might arise here. And then he continues that as long as we live and act under their dominion of all those unwholesome forces, then we're not our own masters, but passive pawns driven by our blind desires, so desires, the craving, into courses of conduct that promise fulfillment, but in the end lead only to misery and bondage. He has quite a language to describe everything. I kind of like it, but it's also kind of heavy in a way. So sometimes we just need to take this little bit with a grain of salt in a way. It's kind of a heavy language. We don't have to take it this heavy, I think. And so he says, true freedom necessarily involves the attainment of inner autonomy, the strength to withstand the pushes and the pulls of our appetites. And this is accomplished precisely by the development of the five spiritual faculties. And I like to give a footnote here of the strength to withstand the pushes and the pulls of our appetites, because it's not that easy to withstand the pushes and the pulls.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be more beneficial to look at it in a way that we let the pushes and the pulls move through us.
Mm-hmm.
So that we are aware of that they arise and also that they pass away, and that we not necessarily always act on them. Or if we do act, that we notice, oh, I'm acting on it, and this is the result, and this is how it feels, and it might not be so pleasant. You know, that we really notice the unpleasantness of it.
It doesn't promise that cultivating the five faculties means that the appetites will not appear. The word withstand.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Withstand.
Yeah, they'll still appear. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they still appear, but...
Mm-hmm.
We work with them, we
mm-hmm.
channel them, we, you know, let them move through us. Yeah, yeah. So the qualities that exercise the function of faculties are of humble origin, appearing initially in mundane roles in the course of our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In these humble guises, they manifest as trustful confidence in higher values, as vigorous effort towards the good, as attentive awareness, as focused concentration, and as intelligent understanding. So this is the description of each of the five. And I think I like it that he says it's of humble origin, because it seems so, you know, in a way it can even seem a little mundane, like, oh yeah, a little energy, a little mindfulness, but behind it is so much power and so much transformation that we can have through cultivating these aspects of heart and mind. The Buddha's teaching does not implant these dispositions into the mind from scratch, but harnesses those pre-existent capacities of our nature towards a supramundane goal, towards the realization of the unconditioned. And so supramundane is, so mundane is like worldly, so beyond worldly goal, the realization of the unconditioned, which is awakening, or Nibbana, also called Nibbana. Thereby conferring upon them a transcendental significance. And so I think he points to that we all have the pre-existing capacity towards this supreme goal, supramundane goal, and that we all have this disposition for each of those five in us, and it's a kind of a gradual path to develop them and to work towards this goal, if we have this goal. I mean, not everyone has the goal to awaken, but now most of us at least have a goal to have a slightly better life than we have now. So, and in a way, that's working towards that goal, even though we might not even want that or need that or think that's even possible. But every little step we set in the direction of more happiness and more wholesomeness is a step in the direction of this supramundane goal, even though we might not even realize it. And we might not even want it. By assigning them a task that reveals their immense potential, and by guiding them along a track that can bring that potential to fulfillment, the Dhamma transforms these commonplace mental factors into spiritual faculties, mighty instruments in the quest for liberation that can fathom the profoundest laws of existence and unlock the doors to the deadless. Yeah, so he's really pointing to this potential that these factors have in our spiritual practice. And so how they transform from commonplace mental factors into spiritual faculties. And I think that even happens when we are practicing this path, that they become less mundane, and we can start to see their power, and start to see how powerful it is to practice with these aspects in their mind. In the practice of the Dhamma, each of these faculties has simultaneously to perform its own specific function and to harmonize with the other faculties, to establish the balance needed for clear comprehension. The five come to the fullest maturity in the contemplative development of insight, the direct road to awakening. And so he's pointing to that they also need to be balanced and harmonized with each other. And so in the beginning he was talking about they are kind of these separate aspects, each designated because they exercise control in their own specific compartments of the spiritual life. But at the same time, they also need to be balanced with each other, and he's going to explain how that works. So in this process, the faculty of faith provides the element of inspiration and aspiration, which steers the mind away from the quagmire of doubt and settles it with serene trust in the triple gem as the supreme basis of deliverance. So that's the function of faith, to give inspiration and aspiration, and to move beyond doubt. And then the faculty of energy kindles the fire of sustained endeavor that burns up obstructions and brings to maturity the factor that ripens in awakening. The factors that ripen in awakening. Yeah, so we need this energy to kindle us, keep us going on the path, so that we don't stop and we don't give up. The faculty of mindfulness contributes clear awareness, the antidote to carelessness and the prerequisite of penetration. And this penetration is meant the penetration into awakening. And so mindfulness is so important on the path, because without it, we don't even know what's happening. So it's just like, and when I did the introductory talk, I called it the hub of the wheel, kind of, and the others are the spokes. It's kind of in the hub, and we need mindfulness for all of them, and mindfulness helps with balancing all of them, because if we're not mindful, we can just easily flip into one or the other without balancing them. So that's the function of mindfulness, to see clearly and to balance the faculties. The faculty of concentration holds the beam of attention steadily focused on the rise and fall of bodily and mental events, calm and composed. Yeah, so concentration is kind of this focused attention, this calm and composedness. He points to the rise and fall of bodily and mental events, which is one of the three characteristics of our existence, this rise and fall, this ever-changing experience that we all have. And concentration can help us to really see that deeply. And then mindfulness can help us to gain insight into it. So we need both. And then the faculty of wisdom, which the Buddha calls the crowning virtue among all the requisites of enlightenment, drives away the darkness of ignorance and lights up the true characteristics of phenomena. Yeah, so wisdom is kind of the crowning virtue among the requisites of enlightenment. Wisdom is not something we can force, though. It's something that arises based on other causes and conditions. Because we've put in the effort, we've put in the mindfulness, we gathered up the faith to do the practice, and we concentrated our mind. And then when all the right conditions come together, wisdom will arise. And so our only task is to put in place the conditions for wisdom to arise, and then it will arise naturally through insights, for example. That's why it's called insight practice. Just as much as the five faculties, considered individually, each perform their own unique tasks in their respective domains. As a group, they accomplish the collective task of establishing inner balance and harmony. To achieve this balanced striving, the faculties are divided into two pairs, in each of which each member must counter the undesirable tendency inherent in the other, thus enabling it to actualize its fullest potential. Yeah, so that's what I was talking about, this balance. And so the faculties of faith and wisdom form one pair, aimed at balancing the capacity for devotion and comprehension. Yeah, so faith and wisdom if you have too much faith or trust or confidence, and then you're kind of walking around blindly, you're it's like maybe you're walking around and but you don't know where you're going, so you have a lot of faith that things are going well, but you're really not going anywhere. If you have too much wisdom, then you might get too intellectual and too not really going anywhere anyway, also because you're it becomes too heady and too intellectual in a way. And there's no kind of kindling of that path through the faith, through the devotion, through the trust of your own capacity and the capacity of the path to bring you somewhere. The faculties of energy and concentration form a second pair aimed at balancing the capacities for active exertion and calm recollection. Yeah, what's often the case is that we either are too energized and then we become restless, or if we get too concentrated with not enough energy, then we kind of sink away into experience, a kind of a sinking mind. So if there's either one of them is too much, we'll need to balance it with the other one. So if there's too much concentration and not enough energy, we need to kindle up some energy. If there's too much energy and not enough concentration, we might want to focus a little more on one thing, for example. Above the complementary pairs stands the faculty of mindfulness, which protects the mind from extremes and ensures that the members of each pair hold one another in a mutually restraining, mutually enriching tension. Yeah, so mindfulness is really important as the hub. Like, it will look out for all of them. Mindfulness will notice if there's too much energy or if there's too much concentration or too much wisdom or etc. So mindfulness is the one who notices all of that and who starts to then realize, oh wait, let's do something different. Born of humble origins in everyday functions of the mind, through the Dhamma, the five faculties acquire a transcendent destiny. When they are developed and regularly cultivated, says the master, they lead to the deathless, are bound for the deathless, culminate in the deathless. And the deathless is another epithet for awakening, for Nibbana. So this is kind of, yeah, really cool that these five faculties can lead us to awakening. And these humble qualities that we all have, you know, we all have some of it in us already. We're all kind of born with that. It's for everyone. So our task is to just keep on going and develop them and cultivate them and work with the opposites of when they arise or any other unwholesome states that might arise in us.